Hi, this is Tim Blair from Crack Sidewalks, the Marquette basketball blog. Today I'm pleased to welcome one of the icons of American sports broadcasting, Dick Enberg, to the site. Currently with CBS Sports, Dick has covered nearly every major sporting event during his illustrious broadcast career. And certainly one of the highlights of his career were the years he spent broadcasting college basketball with the legendary Al McGuire, the patron saint of Marquette basketball. As Marquette fans know, in later years, Dick penned these critically acclaimed one-man show, The Wit and Wisdom of Al McGuire, which returns to Marquette's Hellfair Theater this Friday and Saturday night. Dick, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Tim, and thank you for the plug Friday and Saturday night at the Hellfair, and I hope that a lot of the families and parents that are coming in for the commencement on Sunday will take time to join us on either Friday or Saturday night. It's about a one-hour show, one man, one act, and then I will join Cotter Smith, the actor who has performed as Al McGuire for now more than 20 times and proudly has received a standing ovation each time. He gets more of Al McGuire in his soul every time he does the show, and I think that those who do attend will find that, as I have, the reward of bringing back this incredible character, the most incredible I've ever met. He comes for an hour, he's back alive again.
That's fantastic, Dick. Thanks. So you mentioned this that the play has now been performed about 20 times, but what prompted you originally to write the one-man show about Coach McGuire?
Well, when Coach died in 2001, the family asked me, and I was honored at the request to write the notes on the memorial program there at Marquette, and a daunting task, to be sure. And I started, and I had very little time to do it, and I was frustrated by it all. And then it finally struck me, I don't need to write about Al McGuire. I'll let Coach write about himself. And so I just made a list of McGuireisms. You know, it's the third reason why people call when they seemed harried. No's a good answer. If a guy brings home flowers for no reason, there's a reason, and on and on. And so I placed some of those in the program. And after the funeral, I came home, and you know, I'm from Michigan. I grew up on a farm, went to a one-room school. I'm naive, and I'm very trusting, and Al always worried about me. He was from the streets of New York and Long Island. He didn't trust anybody, and so he would, whenever there was an opportunity, would teach me about life. He would see things in everyday life that I would totally miss. And I thought, well, I should write these down and share those either with my family someday, or maybe as I wrote more and more, that, you know, the young kids in college ought to hear this, the wit and the wisdom of this man. And the more I wrote, the more I thought of other things to write about. And I'd find myself 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and words jumping off my fingertips. And finally, I realized if I moved part A over where part 23 is and 12 back to 7, that actually this could be a play. There's really 3 distinct areas of his life that I'm chronicling. One is the growing up and becoming a basketball player and coach and winning the national title. And 2 is when he joined Billy Packer and myself as a television broadcaster at NBC and later at CBS. And then 3, his dying days and the wisdom even at that time, how sage his guidance was. And so the play was born, and then it was a matter of finding an actor in Cotter Smith, who married a girl from Milwaukee, Heidi, who as a director became the right choice. Phyllis Ravel, the head of the theater department at Marquette, recommended Cotter Smith, and the marriage was made.
Sounds great. So in all of your research on Coach McGuire and reflecting on these different phases of his life, was there any particular anecdote or memory in your mind that exemplifies why he has remained such an enduring figure?
Well, because he was such a complex guy. Now, when I first met Al as a broadcaster, and he didn't let too many of us in the media enter his electrical field, and I was one of those. I was from out of town. I was the young announcer then who had been doing the UCLA games, and you couldn't find him. He wasn't at practice often, and then he didn't come on court on game day until the lights were dimmed and the spotlight was on and he could come out with the flower, the boutonniere, and avoided me. And I finally decided, hey, every other coach gives me time, but you don't want to, the heck with you, I'll talk about the other coach. And then eventually, and actually it was the weekend of the 77 National Championship in Atlanta, I said, Coach, I'm calling this game on national TV, the semifinals. I've got to get to know who you are. And he took me outside the Omni in Atlanta, and he started just to talk about life, not about basketball at all. And about an hour later, I walked away shaking my head saying, what an amazing person this is. And that was where the love affair for me all began. So there was this character that was tough and profane, and in a day where he could hit his players and they hit him, he would argue with his players and allow them to argue back. He would chase after officials, get technical fouls, that sort of Al McGuire personality. And then there was the new Al McGuire, as he said, I was just trying to be a fox on television, but the fox became the new Al McGuire, the guy that everybody likes now. Now who am I? And one of the reflections in the play is that Al didn't have a lot of basketball memorabilia in his office. He had pictures of clowns on his wall. And when you think about it, Al had a clown's face. I mean, he had sad eyes, and he had almost a sad smile. And was he sad, or was he happy but sad inside, or was he happy outside? And so this whole complexity is a part of trying to paint a very difficult canvas. Al McGuire was a struggle to study.
And from a broadcasting perspective, McGuire was a real breath of fresh air for the color commentary field. In many ways, Dick Vitale before there was a Dick Vitale. Did you realize what you had, that kind of magic as a broadcaster, when he joined you on the sidelines?
Oh, immediately. Billy and I recognized it because he was off the cuff. Yeah, I mean, you could not predict what he would say. He didn't study the notes and the media guides and the newspapers and interview the coaches and all that. I mean, he just reacted as he did as a coach. He reacted to the game, the officials, the coaches. And he used to say, man, you guys do all that study. There's only one particular source that is always reliable, who knows more about the team than anyone else. And Billy and I raise our eyebrows, and who is that coach? He said, the team manager. The guy on the bottom of the ladder knows everything about all the people above him, and not necessarily the man at top. And it has, and he would go on, Coach McGuire, and say, and it applies if you're going to go to a school system and you want to know what's really going on in the school, do you go to the superintendent or do you go to the custodian to really find out what's happening? And it's one of the little pieces, nuggets of wisdom that Al saw that so few of us did. And even NBC at the time, when they hired him in 1978, they knew of his reputation, that he could let a naughty word slip out now and then and could behave somewhat out of television character. So they put him, when we first started doing games as a team, he wasn't with Billy and I at courtside. They would find an empty room in a locker room or a toilet in the arena and put Al in there with a TV monitor, and every time he wanted to talk to us, he'd press a button and a light would come on, and then I'd say, let's go to Al. It was insane. And it was Billy Packer who said, hey, here we have the one man in the entire country who saw the game and knew how to run a game better than all the other coaches, and we've got him in a bathroom watching television. Get him out here with us. And that's how Al, after six or seven games, came to courtside with us, and we created this rather incredible team.
That really was. So legends are really difficult to follow, and not only from a broadcasting perspective, from a coaching perspective. And from coaching UCLA after Wooden, they struggled. St. John's after Carnesecca left. Marquette notably had its struggles in the wake of Al's retirement. As you've watched college basketball now for decades, and we start to see other coaches move on like Lute Olson, what thoughts do you have on institutions who are transitioning from an archetypal leader who in many ways not only defines the program, but the way many people view that institution?
Well, it's impossible, isn't it? I think you've well chronicled the evidence that shows that, I mean, if you are crazy enough as a young coach to replace a legend, then you probably are only giving two or three years of your time to pad the nest for the man who's going to replace you, then might be able to have the fans forget about that legend. It just is a terrible vice in which to find yourself placed. the you know, John, when I did the UCLA games for 9 years and they won 8 national championships, that made me a pretty good announcer. and despite the fact that Coach Wooden left a very good team for you know, the man Gene Bartow, who would follow him, and Bartow had had great success at Memphis State and other schools. It just it haunted him that he couldn't be perfect. That, and if you didn't win a national championship, then you weren't good enough. And it was only after some seasons that weren't so satisfying that UCLA fans would back off and allow a new coach. And I guess after Gary Cunningham and Larry Farmer, and finally it was Larry Brown who took them to the Final Four. And at that time, the Bruin faithful were able to accept him as maybe being now the replacement of the Wizard of Westwood. And the same for Al. It was, you know, for Hank Raymonds, a great coach, it was a tough assignment, even though he was part of the Marquette family for all of those years. If anyone came to me and said, gee, I've got a chance, I've got a great record, I could Duke is looking for somebody to replace Coach Krzyzewski, should I take the job? I'd say, yeah, I'm going to chase you out of town.
Exactly. So now the show's run now over the last several years in several different locations. You were at the Final Four in Atlanta to commemorate the 30th anniversary of Marquette's title. You were in New York a couple of years ago. What's the ultimate goal for the wit and wisdom of Al McGuire?
Well, Al was a New York man, a Long Island kid that grew up above the Irish Bar there in Rockaway Beach. And if any city should be able to embrace what Al taught me and taught anyone that was fortunate enough to rub shoulders with the man, it would be New Yorkers. It's a New York guy reflecting on his New York education. So that would be my goal. It would be a victory of sorts if this little play, and I'm certainly not a playwright, but there's been enough positive response to it that I think it deserves that chance. And in fact, this week in Chicago and in Milwaukee, there are a couple of high-powered Broadway-type producers that are going to be sitting in the audience, and hopefully one of those will say, you know, this is something that we've got to take to New York. And I think eventually it's going to happen. But, you know, in the meanwhile of life, this may be one of the most rewarding of all. You know, one, the fact that I took all of Al's words and his teachings and created a play, although it's really him writing it, I just organized it, and that people liked it, that's one victory. But even more importantly is the fact that for 60-70 minutes that this guy that I learned to love is alive again.
Right. Sounds like it's terrific, and maybe you should write a few more plays, Dick, if the response continues
to be as strong as on
this.
I think my career is over in terms of writing plays. I might write something else, but I think this is a one and only. And I'd like to add as well, it sounds like I'm doing a commercial, but many of the folks that have attended didn't know who Al McGuire was. They were taken to the play by a basketball fan or a Marquette fan that certainly admired and adored Al in his day. But when the play has been over and we ask for the audience reaction, and I go up and ask for, you know, questions or reactions or whatever, it's the women especially that seem to enjoy the play as much, if not more, than the men, because they didn't know Al. And it's not about just a basketball coach. It's about this sagacious soul that taught them so many things within 1 hour that he had learned in his life. So that has been an especially high commentary and reward for me, that those who didn't even know who Al McGuire, one woman thought it was about Mark McGuire, and came up to, after the show, to congratulate Cotter and thank me for allowing her to meet this crazy guy from New York and Marquette.
So now I understand also that this weekend when you're back in Chicago and then up in Milwaukee on Friday and Saturday, you're also going to be delivering the commencement address for the class of 2009 at Marquette. And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask if you might want to share a bit of your own wisdom and advice that you're going to be sharing with the graduates on Sunday at the Bradley Center.
Well, first of all, it's going to be a collaborative effort, Tim. I'm going to start by explaining my grassroots education and how education took a total nobody off a farm and allowed me to be somebody, and that certainly is what we can applaud about our college and university system for all of our students, including those that I will be addressing on Sunday. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about Al McGuire. And they gave at one of the games this year a little miniature statue of McGuire in that pose with both arms raised in triumph. And I'm going to take that out of my pocket and put it up on the podium. And I'm going to say that just as we teamed up for many a college basketball broadcast and friendly encounters, so are we going to join forces today, and it's going to be an effort of both Al and myself. It's going to be in his spirit that I address you today. And so then I'm going to borrow from some of his, I think probably in the play, the most important piece of philosophy, and it's something I'll share with them, is Al talked about taking a right-hand turn. And the right-hand turn physically for him was leaving Brookfield outside of Milwaukee, coming into town, and he would come to an intersection where you could turn left and go into Milwaukee and Marquette University, and you could take a right and find yourself in a short amount of time out in the beautiful Wisconsin countryside. And he said his concept of being successful in life was the fact that once a month he would be able to, as he stopped at that intersection, hang a right and go out into the country. He wouldn't call into Marquette. The coaches knew where he might be. That would ruin the spirit anyway. It was the idea of letting life come to you, not having an itinerary. Go out and meet the guy with two teeth missing. Lie in an alfalfa field and look at the sky. Don't have a game plan. And he always contended that taking that right-hand turn was a measure of success. And we can't all not call, call in and say we're not going to be in today, but there's no reason why we can't employ the philosophy of that right-hand turn. Maybe it's only 1 hour a week where you turn off all the technological equipment that we have and have a one-on-one encounter with somebody you care about, or not do anything. Just let your mind go where it may. And that right-hand turn philosophy is one that I have borrowed and one that I'm going to share with these students on Sunday.
Sounds terrific, Dick. Thanks a lot. And thanks for joining us today at Crack Sidewalks to reflect on Coach McGuire and on college basketball. And again, tickets for this weekend's performances of Wit and Wisdom of Al McGuire are $30 a piece. They're available by calling the Health Fair box office at 414-288-7504. Or, I can't believe I'm saying this after what you just said, Dick, you can follow Crack Sidewalks on Twitter for more details.
Well, the Crack Sidewalks, he didn't want any grass in front of the kids' house. He recruited them. If there was grass out there, he didn't want them. He wanted the Crack Sidewalk athlete, and it certainly paid off well for him, didn't it?
No doubt. Well, thanks very much, Dick. Appreciate your time, and good luck this weekend in the Midwest.
I enjoyed doing it. Thank you.